We'll call the hearing to order. Before we do anything, on behalf of the committee, I do want to thank the people of Kodiak for the fine luncheon that you provided. It was really excellent, and some of us have been debating whether we're allowed to go to both of those tables over there, but I think we all indulged in both anyhow. I do want to thank you also for coming, realizing this is a Friday night, and maybe there's other things that might be considered more important to do. And I want to thank Senator Zara for coming to attend the meeting with the committee. And let me introduce the committee. We have Senator Al Adams from Kotzebue there, and we have Fred Zardoff, from Kodiak, and we have Jim Duncan, Senator Duncan from Juneau, and I'm Senator Paul Fisher from the Kenai Peninsula. So the way we'll do this, I'll read from the list as you signed up, and basically you can almost take as much time as you want, like 3 minutes, 4 minutes, something like that. So this is the third meeting that we've had. We've been to Sitka, we've been to Ketchikan, and also this is a constitutional amendment, which would mean that whatever would come out of the Senate, there's 14 votes that will be needed out of the 20. We've already passed the House overwhelmingly, so it's a matter of now we're down to this body, and that's why we're going around the state to see what the people want. So you're free to speak, hopefully, about this. We don't want to discuss roads. We've already done that among you before we got here, so if you can limit it to the endowment. But with that, we can start with Jerome Salvi.
For mayor.
Yes. Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee. We really appreciate your coming to Kodiak. It's a real privilege for us to have the full committee here visiting us today. I do want to take just a moment's digression and thank you for the work that you've done as far as supporting Senator Zaroff's bill on the hospital, which is another critical issue for our community and one that we really do appreciate the support you've given us as far as moving that bill through the Senate. And hopefully we can get it on through there and at least on the ballot this fall. So I do want to say thanks for the help on that one. As far as the endowment is concerned, the Kodiak Island Borough's position is on record with a resolution. The presiding officer of the assembly will come up and provide you more detail on that in a moment. But basically, we're saying that we feel that it's an issue that the citizens of the state of Alaska should have the opportunity to vote on. And we would therefore urge you to go ahead and get it on the ballot. Please get as much clear information to the public as possible so that they can make an informed vote, and let's see how the public wants to go on this particular issue. So, at the moment, that's the position of the Kodiak Island Borough, is that we do support putting it on the ballot and letting folks have a vote on it. Thank you.
Any questions? I just have one. When you say put it on the ballot, what we've been hearing is the people are basically saying, maybe you're saying the same thing, it doesn't have to be exactly the way it was. In other words, it doesn't have to get into the permanent fund. It could be some other avenue, but still have it on the ballot. Are you bent on one particular way that it goes on the ballot as to the substance?
No, my answer to that would be no, because I think, that's basically you folks' business. If you see a better way to structure this thing, perhaps, than maybe what came out of the House, and you folks didn't have to jawbone that out with the House folks. But, the thing is I think conceptually looking at an education endowment for the state and having the public vote on whether they want to go with an education endowment or not is what we've said, that makes sense. Let people vote and have their say on that issue, and we're not speaking to the exact structure. We would expect you folks to hash out the details of what the best structure is to present to the voters. We're not presuming to take that away from you. We think that's what you folks are getting the information and the data and should be able to put that together for us as best as is possible.
Okay, thank you. Any questions, committee members? Okay, thank you. Learn White? Lonnie.
Thank you. I'm just giving testimony for the Kodiak Island Borough as the presiding officer. We passed a resolution in February of this year, February 6th, and it says, whereas the Alaska's public elementary and secondary schools are now supported by oil base revenue, and whereas about 25% of each year's state expenditures are public education, which is mandated by the state constitution, and whereas it is estimated that within 10 years, Prudhoe Bay production will drop by almost half, where the decline coupled with fluctuating local property values and increasing more unpredictable federal funding for education makes the future of Alaska's schools funding very uncertain. Now, therefore, be it resolved by the Kodiak Island Borough Assembly, supports the governor's effort to encourage the Alaska State Senate to approve the constitutional amendment to be placed on the November 1990 general election ballot for the people of Alaska to decide if they want the education endowment fund. Basically, what the assembly wanted to say was, we think it's right for the people of the state to have a voice in this, and whatever they decide is fine. That's how we feel about it. And I would back what Jerome said. It's, we feel that's your prerogative, how you set that up, but that's how we feel about it.
Okay, thank you. Any questions? Senator Adams?
To make it clear is what Senator Fisher is stating, that perhaps how we fund the endowment fund could perhaps not be from the permanent fund reserves or any, perhaps from other funds such as litigations from the oil companies. And that's a debate we will have probably, and that's where he's coming from.
It's good to know that you have more than one source. I didn't realize that.
We can always reduce the municipal assistance revenue sharing. Those kinds of things.
I hope not.
That's Senator Fisher's
proposal. Senator Zara. Yeah,
Mr. Chairman, not being a member of the HES committee, I want to disassociate myself with the comments of the chairman.
Well, you're the one that wrote that. Didn't you write a note to me about that? No, also, if you take notice, we always get near a door. So we can go that way if it gets to be that way. Okay, Larry Ledoux.
Through my name there. I didn't know that that was the order of speaking.
Oh, you did. So you don't, if you want to say
that was
something.
That sort of fine, I'm not sure yet.
Oh, okay.
My name is Larry Ledoux. I'm the principal of Kodiak High School, and I'm very much in support of this amendment. I probably won't be around when we start benefiting directly from it, but my children will. And I know from working with kids and with programs that it is very important that when we're planning that we know how much money is available to carry out the programs. I think it's important that from the level of teaching, teachers, when they plan their budget, they have to know what's available. Or they can't put together a budget. They can't plan. They can't deliver the program that we need to deliver. It's very difficult in recent years to do long-range planning because we never know how much money is going to be there at any given time. And I think that affects kids directly, because some years we'll have a program and the next year we may not. It forces us to spend without planning, because when we get our money at the very last minute, it means that we can't do the planning necessary to be effective in what we do. I see this amendment as a way of stabilizing our finances so that we can do long-range planning, that we can meet specific goals, and we can evaluate the performance of those goals, and then we can make some realistic decisions again with the budget.
Any questions? I just have a comment. That may not guarantee that you will know ahead of time what you're getting anyhow, even when that kicks in, because most likely it's going to be less than what you really needed for education anyhow, which means you're still going to have to rely on the state general funds to come in. So it may not change that at, you know, where you will know early. All you'll know is, well, at least this much is coming. But it may be so far off that it really won't help you as far as early notification goes.
Yeah, I think that anything that can help will help. And also, this gives me an opportunity to say to you that the sooner we know how much money to spend, and again, I'm a mid-range manager, but at my level, it's very important to know how much money is going to be available so that we can plan our programs. And so I'm glad to be able to tell you that.
Thank you. Jim Fisk. Oh, okay. Alice Knowles.
I don't know what you meant by that, but my name is Alice Knowles, and I've been a member of the school board for the past 6 years. I have four children who have graduated from the Kodiak School District. One has completed college, two are in their final year at college, and my youngest son is a sophomore in college. Their educational experiences in Kodiak have given them the basic foundation to be successful in their college endeavors. The cost of educating kids in Kodiak or anywhere in Alaska is not cheap, and I do not anticipate it's going to get any cheaper. In 1986, we experienced a 10% drop in revenue from the state. We were not treated any differently than any other state agency. Apparently, kids were considered to be in the same category as fish and roads or every other state expenditure. And I don't believe that that's right. I have heard that legislators say that education is just one more special interest group. And from my perspective, kids are a special interest group. And if we ever lose sight of that, I think that we have all failed. The permanent fund, as I'm sure you've heard all around the state, is sacred. People have called the endowment the first rate on the permanent fund. But what other options do you, as our elected representatives, have to offer that will provide long-term, stable funding for schools? If you have a better solution, I am certainly open to it. I like my permanent fund dividend check just as much as anyone else does, but I am willing to cap it in order to provide the children of this state with what they deserve, a quality educational program that will provide them with the finest education possible. Please pass this proposal to the voters of the state and let them make the decision that children are indeed a very special interest group. Thank you.
Any questions? Thank you, Alice.
Just a comment. Her daughter is doing real well there at the basketball team there, UAA. We see her on TV quite a bit.
UAA or UAF?
UAA?
Okay.
APU. My mistake, APU.
Here
I was carrying UAA all the time.
Okay.
I just remember.
Cheryl McNeil.
Good evening. My name is Cheryl McNeil, and I'm also a member of the school board. I have three children and am also a graduate of the Kodiak Island Borough School District. I want to address just one little sliver of the information being presented to the public. The numbers that are being presented to both sides as to whether or not this is going to impact your dividend check or not impact your dividend check, each side has numbers that support its view. As a practicing CPA, I will tell you that if you give me the answer you want, I'll give you the equation that will support that answer. What I would like to see is some information come forth that would allow the public to make an informed decision so that I don't have somebody assuming one rate of return over here to determine what the earnings are and somebody else using another rate. The public doesn't see that. All they see is, well, this guy's telling me yes and this guy's telling me no, and if that's their bottom line, if that's the primary consideration they're going to make their decision on, that information needs to be standardized, because I don't think your average citizen is going to go to the work to say, well, but are they using the same criteria?
You're aware that there will be a publication coming out, assuming this is on the ballot, where you get a pro and a con put out by the state. Let me ask you this. This was asked at other meetings. Do you believe that the governor should be allowed to use state funds to advance one side of the issue? It's on the ballot.
Probably yes, because I support the governor's position. If I was on the other side, I don't know. But I think what I'm saying, what I want you to get, is that everybody needs to be playing with the same deck of cards. You know, if I oppose the endowment fund, then all I have to do is walk into my equation and say, well, let's see, if I lower this variable, then I can get the answer that I need to convince the public that I'm right. And unless everybody's playing with the same deck of cards, no one's going to get the answer that they want, because they're not going to have the information that they need. I mean, if they're going to say, this is what my equation equals, then I think they should both have to list what their criteria are. The public may not understand that either, but at least the information is in front of them. You know, one side may be saying our rate of return is 3%, and the other side is saying 5%. Those are the differences that I don't think the public is understanding, and all they're seeing is they think both sides are using the same set of numbers and coming up with different answers. And 2 is always 4.
Yeah, just one comment and maybe a question for you, because there are a number of variables in this.
I would imagine there are.
which, of course, we as legislators have to consider as we decide whether or not we're going to vote to even put it on the ballot. And I think both you and Alice Knowles talked about using permanent fund earnings, which the resolution is now designed to use, 40% of the earnings of the permanent fund. Right now, as you understand, the earnings of the fund are used about 50% for dividends, not quite 50% for dividends, inflation proofing, and then the rest of it goes into the to the earnings reserve account.
Mm-hmm.
I guess one of the problems that I'm wrestling with on this whole concept is that when you dedicate constitutionally 40% of the earnings to education, you've tied it up. I mean, it's there. It's sure it's going to go for education. The problem is you're not going to be able to use that in its entirety for about 15 years. It's going to be 15 years before it'll even generate about $500 or $600 million. For the first few years, it's going to generate very little money for education. I think in the first year, it's $17 million. In the second year, it's a little bit more, et cetera. My concern is, what happens if we have a real serious revenue problem in this state in 3 or 4 years? If the bottom drops out of oil prices, it goes from the $19, $20 a barrel we've got today to $10 or $8 again. We don't have revenues available, and we need to fund education, and the only place we've got revenues coming off of are the permanent fund, and we've constitutionally dedicated 40% of that to education that's 15 years down the road. And the rest of us tied up in dividends. What do we do at that point? That's, I've got to tell you, one reason why I'm not at this moment sure what I'm going to do, because that's a big concern to me, is that we may be tying our hands so tight we won't be able to solve our educational needs in 4 or 5 years.
I heard a presentation on the dividend fund in November that stated, when I first started looking at this issue, my interpretation was it was an either-or choice between dedication of funds or income tax. What I heard at that meeting was it's not either or. Eventually, the income tax is going to have to come back anyway. So I suppose, Senator Duncan, my answer to you would be, although it would make my life more miserable than it already is between January 1st and April 15th, the state would probably at that point have to look more seriously at an income tax. I mean, I left Alaska in 1978 to go to college. I came back in 1986. In that 8 years, if a person doesn't fish, drive a car, smoke, there's one more, drink, they don't pay any tax in this state. I mean, while I was outside, that was not the true reality. It cost me $240 to license my car. I think the state's gotten a little spoiled. I love it here. I wouldn't have come back. But I think it's time Alaska woke up. The boom days are gone, and I'm sorry I missed them. But I think it's
stick around,
to face
maybe back.
you
got to go up and down. Right?
You got to pay for what you get.
Yeah. Well, I would concur with that. I mean, I think maybe a lot of folks would concur with that, although it's probably a perception of the legislature that a majority of the people in the state aren't ready to go back to an income tax yet. But even if we had an income tax, we probably could generate, I think it figures out, $200 million a year from an individual income tax. And I only toss this question out because I think it's something that needs to be seriously considered if we're talking about using earnings off the permanent fund. Because once you've constitutionally dedicated them, you're not going to get them back. So 40% is set aside, and it's going to benefit us 15 years, but not immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And the dividend, although it's not constitutionally protected, it's the closest thing to being a constitutional protection you can get, because anybody who talked about taking it away would be run out of the state, probably. So it concerns me that we may address the solution for funding education in the long term, but in the short term, we may end up with a real problem, and that's my only point.
One of the best analogies I've ever heard of the dividend fund is that it's Alaska's rainy day account. And, you know, you can always, every family should have a rainy day account, and you can always pledge part of that rainy day account as collateral. Now, if it starts raining before that collateral is free, then you got to look at other alternatives, be that personally or the state. Thank goodness my budget's smaller than yours, and so I don't have to look quite so much. But it's the same struggle. So there are more alternatives out there. I don't think the voters of this state, I think they need to vote on it. That, to me, is what has become real passionate. Whether or not it passes or fails, I'm willing to accept what the people of the state say. But I believe the people deserve the right to vote on it.
May I ask one follow-up question
sure.
on that, Ken?
Sure.
And then just one follow-up on this last statement that you believe people need to vote on it, whether it passes or fails. Do you have any concern that if people voting on an education, an endowment to fund education, vote it down, that could have a negative impact on future funding of education in this state? Could send the wrong message?
No, but I think it would have an impact on anybody ever attempting to dedicate part of the permanent fund again.
Yeah, I think you're right. You can't do it for education. You can't do it for anything.
Well, you know, and that's the point. I when I was at the WSB convention, I was talking to a lady there that one of the arguments that I hear more than anything else is, well, is education the only part of state government that needs to have part of the permanent fund dedicated? And the response that I got from this lady, I felt, is the best answer to that. And the answer is no. Any part of state government who can convince 50% of the people of this state that part of that fund needs to be dedicated for its use is entitled to it. And I think that's accurate. You know, being on the school board and being part of this community and a parent, I just happen to be a little more passionate about education.
Okay.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bill Oliver.
My name is Bill Oliver, and I'm here to urge you to support the Education Endowment Fund resolution. I've lived in Alaska for 24 years, the last five in Kodiak. I have five children in the public school system here, and I'm on the Kodiak Island Borough School Board. I'm employed in the private sector, and my youngest will graduate from high school in 1996, so I have very little vested interest in this proposal. I think everyone's aware that state revenues are going to drop drastically in a few years, and state governments simply won't be able to maintain current spending levels. You or your successors are going to have to make some very difficult and very unpopular decisions about where to cut. The Education Endowment Fund would prevent school districts from suffering from those inevitable cuts, and I think that's as it should be for a number of reasons. First reason I think funding to education should be protected is that primary and secondary education is far and away the most important function of state and local government. If you produce young citizens who are able to appreciate their own worth, are able to appreciate the world they live in, and are motivated to be contributing members of society, they'll find a way to utilize and protect our resources, build our infrastructures, and take care of those who can't take care of themselves. Conversely, if you fail to educate our youth and instill in them the qualities I've just mentioned, they'll be unable to use our resources and infrastructures no matter how generously these items have been funded, and they'll be among those who can't take care of themselves. The second reason I think education funding needs to be protected from cuts is that compared to the other 49 states, Alaska devotes a disproportionately low share of its state and local operating budgets to education. In 1987, the last year for which data is available, Alaska spent 18.3% of its state and local budgets on education. The national average was 23.9%. We ranked 48 out of 50 states. California and Hawaii were below us. Now, this may not mean that in 1987 we spent too little on education, although we were spending less in 87 than we spent in 85. It has to mean that we were spending money on stuff that almost all the other states deemed to be less important than education. When it comes time to cut, if we share the same values as other Americans, the protection provided by the Education Endowment Fund could be the vehicle to bring our education spending more in line with the rest of the country. The third reason I think education funding should be protected by an endowment fund is accountability. Due to the work of the Joint Committee on Education, which I think Senator Jones co-chaired, there's legislation pending which will cause all districts to publicly state their goals and priorities for improving education, publicly state their success or failure in achieving those goals, and publicize how well their students are doing compared to the rest of the country. I welcome this legislation, and I urge you all to support it. With its passage, you'll have assurance that you'll get some bang for your education buck, and I don't think you have those assurances exist anywhere else. Finally, I want to thank you for coming here to Kodiak and giving us all the opportunity to express our views. Do you have any questions?
Bill, I have a question. I wonder where you got those figures, because we know we're number one per capita in the nation.
I got them from DOE yesterday.
And did they include, bonded debt on school buildings and those kinds of things?
No, my understanding is that it's operating budgets, not capital expenditure budgets.
Okay. Of course.
I can give you a copy of the data if you'd like it.
No, if you got it from DOE, we can get it.
All right.
I'd be interested in that. Our operating budget in the state
We're about $500 million for the foundation formula program, and the total budget's a little over $2 billion. We're 25% at least, I think. Is that correct, Al?
That's correct.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're 20. Yeah, you are.
For the state.
For the state governments, right. Obviously, a lot of our school districts, the local governments, are putting in nothing. The way this data came, I asked for state budget only, but it isn't compiled that way, apparently.
Yeah, you're aware. Oh, go ahead.
But I think if you'd find, if you compared state budgets, Colorado, for example, spends 60-some percent of their state operating budget on education. I think, again, you'd find that Alaska is very low. Obviously, we've had tons of money to spend. I mean, we take $400 million and give it to people who may or may not need it. That's a luxury.
You're aware there are some local school districts would like to put more in but can't.
That's right. Okay. There's a 6-mil cap.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Dave Hernstead? Christine. Sorry. By the way, the crab salad was excellent.
Thank you. My name's Dave Hernstein. I'm also on the school board. I have two girls in 8th grade and one in 9th grade, so I figure my kids will be out of the system before this endowment would take place. My parents moved to Alaska in 1961. I was in college at the time. I started working summer jobs, and I remember my dad telling me, well, Alaska's a poor state. And I said, what do you mean? Because if you could get a bush job or a construction job or something, there was good money to be made. But he says, if you live in here year-round and everything else, and as a state, we didn't have a lot of money. We were dependent on the federal government and military construction and fishing, but as states go, we just didn't have money. We were a poor state. And 5 or 10 years ago, when there were some countries, Venezuela and Mexico and Nigeria, some of them had collapses in their economy. They were boomed earlier. And I don't remember if it was exactly when the price of oil dropped. I think it was before then. And they spent a lot of money on boondoggles, and God, I hope it doesn't happen here that we end up broke. And I think we spent a lot of money wisely. But the problem is, I think we've got too high expectations. We have so many services, and I think back as to what we've gotten out of Kodiak here out of the oil money. And if you look at our villages, all our villages have airports now. Some of them have boat harbors. There's electrical systems. They all have a local government, and we all have the free TV. We have sewer water systems. A lot of these things are in town, you see, too. And you know, we've got harbors in our town. We got a bridge. When I came here, there's one paved road that went the length of town. And now when the roads weren't paved, you had dust in the summer, but they could grade the potholes in the winter. So I figure if I'm put up with potholes, it's better than dusty roads in the summer. But a lot of money was spent to improve this town. But a lot of people got things. And I was one of the first when 10, 11 years ago when I built my house to get the subsidized home loan. I got a subsidized boat loan. I was against it. I testified against the subsidized boat loans because it just let everybody buy bigger boats and more expensive boats. And I think the home loan program was, I've heard people in Anchorage say, it was one of the main causes of the bust over there, is that people had more expensive houses than they could afford. But regardless of all that stuff, a lot of people have got a lot of things. We have subdivisions outside of town where the roads have been put in and sewer and water. A lot of people in this town have got free sewer and water out of all that. But all the different things that we put in, all these infrastructures, are going to cause higher operating costs. It's going to cause more government. You know, how the village governments, how are all the harbors and things are going to need maintenance? And we've got a lot of these things, and we're dependent on the revenue sharing. We're dependent on everything. And we have expensive patrol boats now. We have new fish and wildlife boats. There's a lot of things. But I usually tell my crew member, I'm a fisherman. I've been making a living 25 years fishing. I like to think of myself at times as a highliner. I do well, and I tell my crew to work like a highliners and to work hard. And to do their work in a responsible way. But I say don't always expect to have a big season, because if you get too high expectations, you're going to be disappointed. If you don't save some money, assuming you're going to have a bad season along the line, you're going to you're going to get into trouble. And what's worried me is that now all these, last year when the legislature was talking maybe a 10% budget cuts, and we were, some of us were down in Juneau and school board business, and the word would be from a lot of legislators, well, it's going to be across the board. You got to take your money out across the board. We have so many special interest groups and so many programs, so it's easier to say across the board. And yet, if you went back to, if you went back 30 years ago or 25 years ago, a lot of these things you didn't have. And so they say, well, we funded education before, we'll fund it again even after the oil goes by, but we'd have all these other demands. And people are used to getting $250 a month if they're a senior. They're used to getting their airport taken care of and not having a municipal court system and all these other kind of things that other states have. And so, one of the arguments that a number of years ago a legislator told me some of the reasoning behind the longevity bonus, and well, I'm not sure if it's called then Pioneer bonus or whatever it's called at the time. He said, well, with all the money, the oil boom, the one group that's not making it, that's not getting part of it, is the seniors. Because, you know, the construction workers and the young people are working and the fishermen are getting their loans and people buying houses are getting housing loans. But the one group that's really not part of that has to put up with the inflationary prices but's not part of the overall prosperity is the seniors. Well, as I look at what might happen in 5 or 10 years, if everybody insists on keeping on getting what they're getting now, the one group that's not going to get it is going to be the kids who are born right now. Because if we keep on saying, no, I want my full permanent fund dividend check, I want it to keep on escalating, and I don't want to pay taxes. To me, the biggest education was last year when they had that traveling budget workshop. Everybody had to sit down for a whole day and go through the budget thing and make believe we were in your shoes, you see. We're going to cut 30% or even 10%. And it's not easy. And so I think our biggest problem sometimes as a nation is savings. We just don't know how to save. Our government, federal government, huge deficits. Even as consumers, we're a credit card society. And if we don't start saving a little bit more, I like the permanent fund because it was savings. I personally don't care about the checks, because I don't live here for checks. I live here because I like Alaska. But I don't know. I don't think you can run schools as cheap now as you did 20 years ago. For one thing, we have some finer buildings. We don't. And this used to be a regional high school. We have high schools in every village of our island now. It takes more money to run that. And I think kids, I don't know whether kids have more problems today than they used to or not, but you sure hear about them or read about them more. And to say, well, if we go back to the amount we spent, you know, in real dollars or per capita 20 years ago or 15 years ago, we can do it. I don't think you can do it with education. But I just feel that we're short in the future. We're looking at, everybody's looking at their own special interests and saying, well, I don't want to pay taxes. I want this loan. I want that loan. I want all these things. And I want my permanent fund check, and don't touch it. But cut down the bureaucracy, but they don't tell you where. If everybody says that, they're really saying, I don't want to save for the future. And sometimes you got to look at what's in the best interest for Alaska rather than the best interest of each special interest group. But I think the thing Bill was referring to was percentage of the budget in that goes to education, not the amount of dollars. Obviously, Alaska puts a lot of dollars in education. And we appreciate it. I feel we have adequate funding. You know, it's good funding. And we've got a lot of good schools. But I worry if that percentage of our budget that's in education stays the same as the budget drops, then it's going to be a real pinch. But anyways, I meandered a little bit. Thank you.
Any questions? Thank you very much. Norman Wooten.
I'd like to welcome each one of you to Kodiak. My name is Norm Wooten. I'm a 21-year resident of Kodiak. I'm a civilian employee at the Coast Guard base. I'd like to go on record before you today as favoring the Educational Endowment Fund. As several others have said, I don't believe this will directly affect me. I have three daughters, two are seniors, and one is an eighth grader. If this concept is successful, then my children will probably be out of school by the time by the time its full impact is in effect. It's my belief, though, that the education of our kids is what determines the future of any state, and I'm concerned about the future of the state of Alaska. I look first of all at the percentage of educational funding the state of Alaska provides as compared to the local funding that's put into education. I then look at where our revenues are derived from, that is the oil, and the declining prices and the reserves of that oil, and frankly, that frightens me a great deal. Logical process in most other states that face this problem would be for local residents to take up the slack through various taxation programs. It's not really feasible for Alaska. Alaska's not like other states. That's why most of us live here. Our sparse population base, combined with the high cost of doing business in remote sites, makes this financially prohibitive for most Alaskans. We cannot continue to provide the current quality of education without some help from the state. We have a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, I think, with the permanent fund to leave a legacy of quality education, one that's funded in advance for the children of the future. Every day I see kids from Kodiak High School being accepted to the very best colleges in the nation, and I see them being successful in those colleges. Unfortunately, this takes money to prepare them to be successful. I can't think of a better way to use my share of a fund that belongs to all Alaskans than for education. I urge you to release this bill from committee, recommend that it be placed on the ballot for all Alaskans to consider. At that point, if the measure fails, so be it. But at least we as citizens of the state of Alaska have had an opportunity to vote on it. In closing, I want to thank you for your willingness to leave Juneau, to come to places such as Kodiak and listen to us as citizens voice our concern on this matter. Thank you.
Any questions? Well, I just have one. You seem to be emphasizing let the people vote on it.
Sure.
How strong do you feel? You feel other issues should go to the people? I mean, some people tell us we're sending you down there to do the job. Don't come back to us with every issue and ask us to vote and tell you what to do. You feel really strong, or you just feel that in this particular area of education only?
I appreciate the opportunity to vote on any issue that will affect me or my family as many years as this educational endowment fund will. Any issue that's this important, I believe, I need the chance to vote on.
And if we could do it without a vote of the people somehow, you would still want it to go to the vote of the people?
Well, naturally, I'm in favor of it. Probably the best answer I can give is, yeah, go ahead and vote on it, but I don't think that's right. I think the people still need to have a chance on it. You mentioned a few minutes ago, about what would happen if by constitutional amendment this money were dedicated to an educational endowment and the state all of a sudden got into a financial crunch, you know, and needed that money. What would happen? I liken that to my own family situation. Many years ago, when my children were first born, we began to put aside money for their college education. We made some investments. Some of these were locked up for other long-term investments. But if my family would have suffered a financial crisis, a catastrophic illness or something, obviously we would have tapped that money and taken it. That may be what the state has to do if that be the case.
Senator Duncan.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, and I guess Hyde made that point. I think you're right, except the problem would be we'd have to go back to the voters to do that, which means
right.
There would be a time frame. I mean, I'm not saying it's wrong to go back to voters, but it would be not a quick reaction. We couldn't react quickly to a problem, but you're right. The alternative would be go back and ask the voters to repeal a dedication. Sure.
But do you really think that we would be in a situation of such a crisis nature that you would be so short-sighted as to not realize that it was coming?
Yeah.
I don't think so. I give you more credit than that.
Well, the problem... I appreciate that. But the problem that we have, of course, is that 85 or 90% of our revenues are based on the oil prices, and you know how those can fluctuate. We never know from one month to the next what they're going to be. And, you know, a year ago, a year and a half ago, we went into the legislative session with a deficit of $1.2 billion facing us because oil prices were at $10 a barrel or whatever, and the oil prices rose. They can drop just as dramatically. So to answer your question,
we don't always have warning where revenues are going to go because of the fact we're tied to the price of oil, and that's determined not by us, but people in other countries.
Well, I think that we have to take a new approach. If I receive a cost of living raise, that doesn't mean I have to spend every dime of that cost of living raise. You know, I can possibly save part of it. I think the state has to start looking at that. If the price of oil goes up, then possibly we have to our spending level has to remain the same.
I don't need to carry this on, but I want to make one other point since you brought that point up, because I think you're right. We do need to save money, and I just wanted to be sure that you were aware that of the permanent fund, there's a little over $10 billion in the permanent fund, and of course, the earnings sufficient to support an education endowment wouldn't be there if this fund wasn't that size. And of that over $10 billion, 60% of that has been put in by the legislature, not because of a constitutional amendment, but because the legislature wanted to save the money and made separate appropriations to put the money in there. In fact, just this last week, we approved another $600 million to go in. So just kind of in defense of us free spenders, we have been saving quite a little bit.
And I think that's a wise choice, yes. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Dennis Nicholson.
Well, I really appreciate you coming to Kodiak. I am the Assistant Superintendent of Schools for the Kodiak Common Borough School District, and have been a resident of Kodiak 14 years. And I was a village teacher, I guess, back in the heyday in the mid to late 70s, and have been in Kodiak since 1983. As an educator, I do have a vested interest in going to the voters and seeing what the people of Alaska really think about an education amendment. But also as a parent, I think I do also. I'm hoping that both of my sons live in Alaska someday and are productive citizens here without the burden of having the spending of my generation be a burden on their generation. We've had a lot of money that has gone not only to the infrastructure of state government, I believe, but also in the permanent fund dividend. We have returned a lot of the money directly to the citizens, and I think that was what the intent was. And then citizens of the state, after that money is returned to them, should make the hard decisions on how much government do they really want. I do know that as an administrator back in 86, when July rolled around and we had a budget set and people hired and we cut $1.2 million out of our budget, it was devastating. And we have, as a school district, not recovered to the point as far as the real support base for education that we were at that level, not even close. I can see a lot of the things subtly in our district that we cannot do that are proactive for kids that we used to do. I think the general public probably doesn't even see it. But as an educator, I do. As a parent, I probably wouldn't. The education amendment, I think, is a very wise decision. Although I do support it, I also support the decision of the voters. And I can't imagine that citizens of Alaska, residents of this state, even if it was voted down at this point, would say that that's a vote against education, because I don't believe that would ever be the case. If I think that would be a vote that this particular avenue at this particular time was not the best choice. The state has supported education since I've been here very well, has continued to support it, especially compared to the two previous states that I was a teacher in. We were in inferior buildings in the state of Oklahoma and the state of California. Most of our support was local. The mill rates were, the mill rate in California where I was 34 mills. You can imagine trying to have a mill rate in Kodiak like that. I think we're around 5.5 mills as far as education, somewhere in that range. So I think there's some real hard decisions we have to make now to ensure that we're going to have a quality education for my grandchildren. I don't believe that I'm going to benefit in my pocketbook, nor am I going to benefit as far as my children, but I certainly hope that as a retiree in the state that I can say that I have a that I've given a portion of what I really didn't have coming in the first place to support education in the future, and that I didn't take it and go, like some folks say that many Alaskans do. Do you have any questions of me?
No questions. Thank you.
Thank you.
John, what do you mean? He's out of the room. No.
I'm John Wittevine, and I'm a former commercial fisherman, wood carver, and superintendent of schools. I was joking with Senator Adams earlier about...
I was supposed to cover that up.
That you, as senators, would make by passing this amendment out to the voters, is that decision going to be in the best interest of kids? We've got a revenue gap that's coming. There's no question about it. I'm curious, without putting you too much on the spot, what your position is right now on passing the amendment out, passing it out for the people. I know I talked to Senator Adams before. I've talked to Senator Zaroff, Senator Duncan, and Senator Fisher.
I think the answer to that is that's what we're here for, to listen to you.
I like what Senator Zaroff said. No, just kidding. You don't have to tell me.
Well, I didn't say what it was one way or the other.
Let me give you my answer, though. At first,
okay.
Is it Senator Fisher is right. That's one reason we're here. It's one reason we're going to conduct a lot of other hearings, and we really haven't done a lot of work on the education endowment. And let me assure you, I think all of us up here support education, and have a good record supporting it very, very fully. But I did have, as I mentioned, a couple of concerns. One about if we tie the dollars up and we have a problem in the near future, how do we address education needs in the near future? I think we got to think about that. And maybe there's some other solutions, maybe a different funding sources solution, whatever, but I'm not opposed to endowing education if we can do it and still be assured we can provide quality education over the next years while we're waiting for that fund to become operative.
I think, not to quite answer your question, I think there are places in state government where we have inefficiencies, and I guess I'd be naive to believe that weren't the case. We have school districts that probably are not operating very efficiently, to tell you the truth. I happen to think that Kodiak is one of the ones that is operating efficiently, which is probably fairly obvious. But there are a number of places in the state that are not spending, from my perspective as superintendent in Kodiak, educational dollars very efficiently. And I want to give you an example of a school district that has about 23 kids and has a superintendent and spends $700,000 or $800,000 a year housing their administration in Anchorage. That to me is not very efficient. It isn't. We have talked about this issue. Our board has talked about this issue at some length. There are places in this state where we can economize. My concern in funding the schools is stability and long range forecasting and planning. Those are really the issues as far as I'm concerned. We've got to have the stability. You can not plan. You got to put a teacher in front of kids. Okay, you can't go. You can't defer a teacher for a year like you can maybe defer paving a road. You can't defer hiring a teacher because you decide that you're going to you're not going to put a new roof on a building. You can put that off. Back in 1986, when we went through a 10% decline with every other with every other agency in the state, we had elementary classrooms with 33 kids in them. Second grade with 33 children, that's too much. That, in the long term, the quality of education is based, I believe, on stability. Stability in your tax base, if it's coming from your community, stability in your state government, which oil cannot provide. It can't. You said it a while ago, Senator Duncan. In 1986, we didn't know oil was going to go to $10 a barrel. We sat right in this room on July, I'll never forget the date, it was July 9, when we presented to the board the fact that Governor Sheffield had just said, we're going to cut your appropriation by 10%. 10% to us was $1.2 million. We were 9 days into the fiscal year, okay? Now you might say, well, why don't you lay off some teachers? You two guys, I'm pointing to Fred and Senator Duncan, you're aware of the restrictions on that. July 9, we weren't in a position to do that. Certainly, we didn't hire the 7 or 8 teachers that we were planning on hiring. We laid off every classified employee we could conceivably come up with. We stuck 33 and 34 and 35 little kids in an elementary classroom. I didn't feel real good about the way we operated schools in 1986, if you want to know the truth. We cut everywhere we could cut. If you walk down our hallways now, you're going to get me started here. I said I was going to be short. You walk down our hallways now in where I took Senator Fisher and Senator Adams into my office. We are now housing the State of Alaska Department of Community and Regional Affairs, the Red Cross, the Civil Air Patrol. We've got an alternative drug and alcohol program. We've got a storage room, and it used to be full of administrators. That's how we paid for it. That's really how we paid for it. Now, we've done that. We've made those reductions. Not everybody in the state has, however. I'd be less than honest if I didn't tell you that. There are places to economize, but we need stability, and I'm open to ideas on how to achieve that. I really am.
I have a question since you brought it up. In 1986, when you had a 10% cut, what happened to the students' performance on national testing? Did they go down 10%?
I doubt
it. Okay. Because you would assume that with a cut in funding, now I'm playing a devil's advocate, I guess, assume that if you had a cut in funding, the performance would go down also. And we asked this of the superintendent, and I believe it was Ketchikan or Sitka, and he said no, there was no change at all. So then certain people out there will say, no, wait a minute, then if that's the case, then maybe we don't need to come up with more money if we're looking at the end result of the
Senator Fisher, I'm going to ask you bluntly. Do you advocate for 35 elementary children in the classroom or 40?
I think it depends on the teacher.
Do you advocate for that?
I say it depends on the teacher. I'm a secondary teacher, and I supervise teachers. And when I see for example, a history teacher that has a lecture class, and he has five sections, and he lectures at the same time, why not put 250 in one class? I mean, I know you don't like to hear that, but you could teach just as effectively. That freshman colleges are doing that now. You know,
sure, I had freshman college classes with 500 students in it. That's right.
I think a lot of it depends upon the teacher. Some teachers can do it. Some can't probably handle 15. You know, I'm not saying that they're all, but the credential of a teacher credential means that they're, quote, at this level. Some of them are still performing down here. The credential doesn't necessarily mean you have a good teacher.
You know what really produces quality learning in a classroom is, you're right, it's quality teacher. And what do you do for that quality teacher? Okay, you give them everything you can. You give them every resource you can. And I can tell you, whether the test scores change when the numbers go over 30 or not, I can tell you the teacher's attitude changes. And that teacher's attitude in front of kids is so critical to the learning that goes on in that classroom. I'm normally on the other side of the fence when I argue class size, okay? The literature says it really doesn't probably make a significant difference in a child's performance unless you dropped below 15. Okay, that's really what the literature says. But I can tell you the significant impact is on the teacher's attitude and how they feel about that instruction going on in the classroom. And I've been in this business a long time, and I've been a classroom teacher, and that teacher's attitude is so critical to the performance of those children. Did our kids' test scores plummet through the floor? Not in one year, I don't think they did. But you know what the school board told me? They said, Mr. Superintendent of Schools, you will reduce class size to 25-1. And we had six goals for the school district that year. That was one of them. You will reduce it to 25-1. And we did. We bought more teachers after that. And we went every other place we could in the system to find the money. That became our primary focus. But I guess the issue is really back to the stability. How do you achieve stability in funding for schools? We're going to have schools, we're going to have kids, we're going to have teachers. We've got to have stability in funding. We've got to have it. And I think, you know, the endowment program will provide that ultimately. Senator Duncan, I share your concern about what happens in 4 or 5 years. I've heard people in the legislature say, don't worry, the next 4 or 5 years are solid. They may be if the price of oil stays where it is right now. I can buy that. But can any of you guarantee the price of oil? I don't think you can. I think that's an issue. But I think it's time we transcend this short-range mentality, year-to-year funding of schools. Last year, we were chasing the 10% decline. This year, we're talking about maybe a little increase. I think every teacher in this state and every school administrator, if you had stability in funding, if you had stability, we wouldn't have to chase that all the time. We wouldn't have to spend money trying to figure out what we're going to do next. We wouldn't have to fly down to Juneau. Of course, I'm also starting to advocate for statewide salary schedules for teachers. So, we're about the business of educating kids. And I think it's time that the legislature helped us find a way to provide that stability. Well, Fred.
Senator Zaro.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One of the professions that John didn't mention there that he held prior to becoming superintendent was that of teacher at the junior high. And we both taught in the same wing of the junior high, if you will, and we both filled our time out in the hallway when students were running to get to class, and we both intimidated them by our size, me with my width and John with his height. And we slowed them down quite a bit. But one thing I'm, that...
Excuse me, Senator Adams, didn't I tell you that story when you were in my office?
Yes,
I did, didn't I?
Yes, you did.
I wasn't kidding, was I?
No. One thing that concerns me a little bit here, the educational endowment, we need to weigh this very carefully over the next 50 days, is going to, if it passes, and would secure or basically commit funding for out of the earnings reserve out there for the next 15 years. And the only way that we're going to be able to change that would be to go back through another vote of the people. We have a piece of legislation that we passed in February of this year that requires teachers to have fingerprints. It had an immediate effective date.
And I am the very first person on the timeline. My certificate expires at the end of this month, and I'm the first test case.
And it's going to take you probably 6 months to get your certificate.
That's right.
Right.
That's
right. Therefore, you're going to be decertified, and you're not going to be certificated to teach if you were a teacher. So
that's correct.
What is going to happen?
Or superintendent.
So this is going to cause a problem. But the thing is, this piece of legislation was done legislatively. We can go back in, conceivably, next week and try to correct that and maybe do it, and possibly do it this session. And if it is a problem, we need to do it this session.
The word I got today from the AG's office was all those certificates are going to be issued if all of the criteria are met. The fingerprinting cards are going to be sent out. They're going to go through the six-month review. And if, in fact, someone should show up as having a criminal history, their certificate will be pulled at that point.
Okay, I guess...
I think that issue is resolved.
Okay, but I think the point there that I was trying to make, and I think Senator Duncan was somewhat alluding to this too, is that if this passes and it becomes a part of the Constitution, and there is a definite need for additional funds, there's not going to be any way to do it. And it's going to be very difficult. You're going to have to make reductions, major reductions, within that 15-year period. And I don't know what that is going to do to other programs, what it's going to do to educational funding. So basically, the funding through the educational endowment won't be available till 2005 or 2006. So
my understanding, depending on how it's written, but those funds can be available much sooner than that. Some of the material that I've read says early as 1995 or 96, some of those initial earnings on the endowment, on the educational endowment, could be made available. But of course, that all depends on how you let that bill out of the Senate and how it's structured when it goes on the ballot, of course, or when, I should say, not when, but necessarily if.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think that's that's important, and that all needs to be fit into the equation. Whether you take the earnings from the monies invested for the educational endowment and enroll them back into the endowment, which escalates the principal there, which gets you to the point where you might want to be a lot sooner, or you just strictly go with the earnings from the budget reserve. So there are a lot of little factors that need to be put into this thing.
What I'm really concerned about is that it's got to, normally in the course of things, stuff has to get really bad before people get, before it gets people's attention. Mill Bay Road's a good example of that. But I'd hate to have that happen to kids in our educational system, to get people's attention. I'm afraid that, in talking to some of my friends regarding their sacred dividend check and the permanent fund, I'm afraid things are going to have to get bad. I'd hate to see that happen. I really would. Norm Wooten said earlier that some of our kids have been accepted to very prestigious colleges across the country. My son got accepted at Purdue this week, and independent of being the superintendent of schools, I am very, very proud of Kodiak High School for giving him the foundation to get into Purdue University should he choose to go there. He's not the only one that got accepted. The other two or three kids that applied also got accepted. And we spread them out all over the country. I'm proud of that. I'm proud of that after living in this community. I don't want to see that level of success that we've had in Kodiak and that's been demonstrated in Kenai and Juneau and Kotzebue. I don't want to see that drop. I don't even want to see it take a dip. That's why we need that long-term stability. That's why we need that long-term commitment. And I think it's time we deal with it. I'm tired of the yearly revenue chase. Governor Cooper said, apparently Alaskans like that. Apparently Alaskans like that. I don't. I'm one that doesn't. But I'm going to stand up
John,
all night.
You see this, though, as not having that revenue chase. And maybe I don't see it that way. You're still going to have that revenue chase when this kicks in because you're not going to have the full funding necessary in the year 2005.
We won't have to chase as much, maybe, Senator.
Well, I don't know. I hope I'm wrong, but I see it no different than today because I don't think there's anybody up here that, right now. I think we knew day one that you're going to get a minimum of $60,000 a unit. I don't think there's anybody that would say not, and yet we still are dinking around with that funding. We could have done it day one. You would have known what you're getting this year. Another thing is the money that we just put into the permanent fund would have future fund schools for the next year.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't have anybody coming down saying, oh, God, don't put it in the permanent fund. Here's your chance. You have $600 million. You can right now take it.
Why didn't you take the step and put that in an education fund right away rather than put it in the permanent fund? I mean, that I can answer that question with the same comment. You could have done that, couldn't you?
Sure.
You could have created the first step of the education endowment without even touching the permanent fund.
You don't have the endowment.
You can stick a trust fund.
Oh, yeah, I could do that.
See, my issue is the gap in revenue. I'm really open to how that's solved, the gap and the stability. Whether it's through this or what, that $650 million, it's in the paper tonight. You stuck it in there. It could have gone into an education trust. You're right. I'm going to let other people testify here.
It's not stuck in there yet. It just passed one body. It's still on the other side. I think it'll be stuck in the other body.
Oh, okay.
If you're a betting man, bet on it.
I think I will. Anything else? Thank you.
Nancy Frost.
Oh, one more coming. Okay. At least 50% of it.
Good evening. I've been a resident of Kodiak for 45 years. I graduated Kodiak High School, and I now have two children in the system. I'm here tonight because I am interested in education. I believe it is the cornerstone of our democracy. I have the long-term interest of Alaska at heart, and I would like to encourage you to pass this proposal on to the voters of the state and let them make the decision that our children are a very special interest. Thank you.
Any questions? Okay, thank you, Nancy. Brad Bringhold.
Good evening. My name is Brad Bringle. I'm a resident of Kodiak since 82. I don't work in the school district. There's really just one thing that I want to bring out that hasn't been mentioned much. I think that putting this money into education is going to be a good investment. I think that you're talking about taking a small portion of the permanent fund, if I understand this correctly, and setting it aside for education. And it seems like there's a lot of advantages as far as the schools trying to figure out what their budget would be, the stability and all that that's been discussed. What you're getting in the long run for that is a better educated Alaskan population, I think. If as Mr. Witteveen says, things will have to get really bad before anyone's going to notice or do anything about education, then we're talking about something very serious and irreplaceable. A missed chance for a good education is something very difficult to go back and retrieve. So if we're thinking of Alaska in terms of an important position on the Pacific Rim, competing in a world market, you're going to need people that are well-educated. And I just think that you need to look at it as a practical matter and take the long view. And it rubs me the wrong way to hear you talking about whether or not you're going to be able to go in a couple of years and get the money back. That's not a good way to look at it. You need to look at this as a good long-term investment and decide for yourselves that you're going to put the money aside and that it's a good thing to do. I'm not sure that all of Alaska would vote for it, and for that reason I'm not sure it should go to a vote. I think it's a good idea, and I think it should be done whether all of Alaska would vote for it or not. That's not very democratic. But I don't feel like I did anything special to earn my permanent dividend check. I live here and I work hard, but I don't care if you send me the check or not. I'd rather see that money go for something that I know is going to pay off for the state in the long run. And education will, there's no doubt about it. That's really all I wanted to say. Thanks.
Brad, I have a question. There's another possibility which isn't in a resolution at all now, but we could have people checking off their dividend checks, a certain percentage or whatever, to go in this fund also, which would generate some money. It would never generate enough to support much because most people wouldn't take that option, I would assume.
No, I think you're right. I think that would come up with too few people checking off their dividend check to amount to a significant amount of money. But I do think that people would somehow manage to get by if the dividend checks weren't quite as big. And I think in the long run, if you've got the money available for education, then it means that when push comes to shove in another few years, that you're not going to have to be having education on that list of things that is getting shaved in order to make ends meet. That money will be there. You're still going to have to be juggling things. You're still going to have to figure out your budget, but at least you won't have to be worrying quite as much about that if I understand what's planned correctly. So, you know, it doesn't solve the problem, but at least it guarantees these kids that are coming up that they're going to have a chance to get the education that they deserve.
What do you see, and I'm sorry I didn't ask other people this, what do you see, what range of do you see this as K to 12? Do you see this as zero to grade 14?
I'm glad you asked that. I think that it's important that it be applied for K through 12, but I'd also like to see some of that money go for higher education in the state. I think I'd like to see some of it available to encourage the development of interests and abilities in some of these more technical areas where Alaska could compete in the world market. I mean, we are strategically located, and I think there are opportunities that could be taken advantage of in terms of trade or higher technology businesses. In answer to the question, I think that the university system should be entitled to some of the money, too.
So basically what you're telling us on the menu, along with the endowment fund, it should be K through 12, higher education, and perhaps a voc tech?
Yeah, absolutely. Sure.
Would you also include school debt service and school construction?
Well, I consider those part of education. I mean, you have to have the physical plant, and you have to have the personnel to teach and administer the physical plant. And it's all part of the same package as far as I'm concerned, and I didn't come up here prepared to speak about how it should be divided up. I think if you're going to have the state get full advantage of a well-educated population, then you've got to look at the whole spectrum.
But for some of us politicians, I think it would be easier if you'd make it as simple as possible for us. As we get confused sometimes and we get in debates and the legislation doesn't get in any place. I think if you just basically told us maybe we should be looking at K through 12, that's simple for us, then we don't have to argue what it does for our particular districts or constituents.
Well, you know, if it came down to it, and I'm not very adept at these political things, but if it looked like that was the way that you were going to be able to get it to fly is to confine it to K through 12, I'd say go for K through 12.
Thank you. Tom Simper.
Yeah, I'm really pleased that the Senate Hess Committee has come to our fair city to give us this opportunity. Didn't realize that I'd work up so fast on the list either. but I am really pleased to have the opportunity to speak to you. And first of all, I'd like to say that I'm certainly a firm supporter of the educational fund concept, and I'd like to give you the encouragement on behalf of my wife and myself to get this thing on the ballot so the people in the state of Alaska have a chance to make a decision on it one way or the other. Thank you.
Tom, are you in education or is your spouse in education?
Yeah, I was born and raised in Alaska. I've moved to Kodiak in 1965. I've been a commercial fisherman for the last 40 years, and I'm taught in Kodiak for the last 25 years.
Yeah, how did you hear about the meeting? We were just looking in the newspaper. I don't know if we got it in the newspaper or not. How did you hear about the meeting tonight?
Well, I'm on the mailing list of the LIO office here, and then there was materials that circulated by our Teachers Association in the buildings.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, thank you.
We've gone through the ones that have said yes. Now, there's some that didn't say anything except one. There's Jim Fisk. We're going to take you now, Jim.
Thank you, Senator Fisher, for bringing your committee to Kodiak, and Senator Duncan, I've known him for a long time, and Senator Adams, and visiting Senator Zaroff. I think when Cheryl got up and spoke about a deck of cards, I think what reminds me of that is there's got to be a joker in every deck. And I think that tonight, and I'm glad you asked that question, was, how did you hear about the meeting? If you put a graph up there and you put teachers or school board members, and then you put people who are working people out there that aren't involved in education but are people, you'd probably have about two, Norm Wooten and Jim Fisk. But I don't deny that. I think that last year on March 3rd, my wife and I received a letter from the governor, Senator Zaroff, Representative Davidson, about attending a workshop about a year ago, the same time. This is the ninth today, 6 days later. And in that workshop, they passed out the normal paraphernalia that the governor puts out, the initial finance, house physical policy, subcommittee, all of the informational sheets that you need to divide up. And when it was all over, said and done, the numbers added up, the committees appointed, the PAC had it 9 to 10. There was state employees, school employees, school teachers, school board, special interest groups, not only in Kodiak, Anchorage, Fairbanks, wherever the workshop was performed, that's, you can look at the documents. And every committee was chaired by somebody that, you know, I was a co-chair on one of them, but like I say, it was chaired by, and this is the way it went. But that's really not it. It is, but it isn't. When you talk about special interest groups, everybody says, I support the permanent fund, education endowment fund, put it out for a vote. I don't want to see it go for a vote. That's what we elected you for. We elected you to go down there and represent every man, woman, and child in this state to the best of your ability. Not a special interest group. Not some lobbyist. Not some individual that's getting a big salary and has got a golden wheel and he's the one that invented it. There's people out there, Senator Fisher, that would love to come here and talk, but they're working. They probably don't know exactly what to say. They don't understand all of this fancy advertising. The governor has sent out his advance team to change the opinion, make it look good, get on the radio, meet with Veronica or whoever the case may be. I think what we need to do is to elect the representative in this next election, and the 10 senators that are up for re-election, that's willing to make that choice. The permanent fund is something that was given to us. We didn't go out and work for it. The House and the Senate worked hard to put that fund in a trust. And that's almost like my dad used to say, is cut the hay, let it dry, and let it get all the minerals and the vitamins that's necessary, and then bale it and put it away for a rainy day. Dad, let's bale it now. I want to go fishing. I want to do this. He said, let it dry. Let it get the vitamins. Let it get the energy that it needs to make the animals grow or produce. He knew what to do, when to do it, and how to do it. And that's what we're saying about the representatives of the state. That's what we elect you for. He bailed the hay right. We loaded on the wagon. And as we were hauling it to the barn, the cattle was there pulling at the hay, trying to get it off of the wagon. That's what the governor's doing. He's pulling up the bales of hay on that wagon. Last year, the governor, in his inaugural speech, talked about the economic limit factor. He talked about the 1% revenue sharing, 8 cents a gallon tax, the Rain Belt Energy Fund, the Rain Belt Investment Fund. And he said, if I don't get those, next year I'm going to get a 20% out of that permanent fund to run the state. My people, the people that I'm talking to, out on the street, the working stiff, the guy that would like to come up here, that you walk up to and shake his hand and say, what do you want us to go into the permanent fund? He'll say, no. You're asking, what do you want to give up to keep us from doing it? Take my permanent dividend. Take it away. Do what you want to do with it. I'd like to buy Christmas presents with it at Christmas time. It comes at a good time. But don't take it away and tamper with the permanent fund. That's a rainy day. John Winnevein talked about, well, why didn't you put that $640 million in there? That was easy. You put $640 million in there from the investment for this year. If that's what you want to do, do it. But I'll guarantee you, when it comes election time, that special interest group will be shortfalled because the people will wake up and realize that that permanent fund was there for a purpose, for a rainy day. If you want to give education a boost, and I'm not against education, I think that's the greatest quality this state has. If I didn't think so, our superintendent wouldn't be worth the salary that he's getting. And I'd like to figure out some way to get that certificate revoked so we could reduce his salary. But getting on with it, I think that the taxpayers need to control the educational fund in their community or in their state. Because if the education gets out of hand, as somebody said, I think John even said it, is they wake up. You get some people talking about it and they're concerned. And that's what it's all about. So I'm strongly opposed to Senate Bill Joint Resolution 13. I think that you gentlemen, along with Senator Zuroff and all of the other senators and the representatives, need to grasp a hold of it. And if you see fit to dip into the permanent fund, then do it. But I don't think that's the answer for the Educational Endowment Fund. I think that the governor is playing with our permanent fund. It's something that's out there. I mean, it's a ludicrous. We have a dichotomy between the teachers and myself and our group, but look at it. The people that are here tonight are PAC-oriented. Do you have any other questions?
Jim, the reason these meetings are called this way, we were hoping to have it that the working man would have some time off. That's why we're doing it in the evening, and tomorrow we're going to Kenai in the morning on a Saturday. And that's why we've been doing this on weekends, figuring that if we do it in the evening or on a Saturday, it'll give people a chance. Because I'm one of those that I detest a meeting in the community at 1 o'clock in the afternoon to 3 during the work week. I just don't think it's a fair way to go. So that's why we did it. The question, you are aware that it does take a vote of the people if you're going to make a constitutional amendment.
Pardon me, sir?
If we're going, we can't just say it's going to be a constitutional amendment. If you go that route, it has to go to the people for a vote.
That's correct.
You're aware of that. But that's, you're correct, saying you only want it to get to the people for a vote.
That's correct.
Okay.
The other thing is, if you'll remember, this 1988 physical year report that the governor put out showing 86, 87, 88, 89. But if you'll notice in that on page 9, it talks about unrestricted general funds operating budget all the way up to 1989. But he forgot to put the full-time position of the employees for 1989. It was like, you know, this is what we got. We got all the other things in this book talk about 89, but nothing on the full-time employees. So that's what I'm saying is let's take a look at it. Like John talked about it, the school system. I can remember when the school system ran wild here. But you got Alice Knowles, the Lady of the Year, who is on the school board president, has helped to alleviate some of that, along with John and some of the shortfalls that we've had. But I'll tell you, the school system we've got here in Kodiak, I consider number one. My kids, my two daughters graduated from high school, and they were, but that's not the issue. The issue is where are we going to get money? And you mentioned the nail on the head, is that there's always going to be a crunch for money for education. I don't care if you don't dip into the permanent fund. If you dip into that, then for the next 15 years, there's going to be a crunch, and until that thing starts materializing, then we'll be able to dip into it.
Hey, Jim, the only comment I had, there's people in the Kenai Peninsula feel that their educational system's number one. So I don't know if you're right or they're right.
Well, I spent a lot of time testifying.
Right. Over
in,
here, I agree you're right. When I get back home, I'll change my mind.
I spent a lot of time testifying in Kenai this year, and I think that you've got some great people over there, and Pat Vincent and Brown. His dad was a master mechanic for me, and right after the tidal wave here, and I, like I say, as I enjoy with those people, we're fighting the game of chance and skill in that area as well as here in Sitka, and being on the gaming advisory group, I'm certainly pleased to deal with you people in the legislature. And I know that John Winnebine and Mickelson, everybody that's in the school system here, Mrs. Winnebine works at the legislative office, so therefore her husband is the principal, the superintendent, and he says, you let everybody know that they're going to be here, or I'm going to beat you tonight. And you notice that she's not black and blue. So anyway, thank you again for coming to Kodiak, and once again, I'm glad that the visiting Senator Zeroff showed up here because I've been calling him, and he's always calling me 15 minutes later when I'm not there. So thank you.
Okay, Pat Holmes.
I think that's your number, Fred.
Now, my name is Pat Holmes, and I guess I'm here as a father figure, and as my boys say, my figure gets more fatherly all the time. But I don't know how I'd really classify myself, because I suppose starting out with one's history is sort of appropriate for any testimony, and I guess the one thing I wish is that I had been born in Alaska, so maybe I'd have just that little bit more credibility when talking. But I went to high school in Anchorage and Fairbanks and moved, worked in Kodiak in 1963, went out to school, and got back here about 16 years ago. And to get through college, probably did everything from sweeping floors and shoveling out barns and tried fishing, and unlike Dave, I lost my shirt and did a whole lot of things. It took me a long time to get through college and a long time to get a job and to get home to where I consider Kodiak, and quite frankly, I plan to be here when they put the meat hooks in me to haul me to the Pioneer Center. And but I would like to say that, first off, I support the endowment concept. I appreciate that you're not deciding this issue right now, that you're doing your hearings, and that you're doing that by listening to the people of Alaska to see what they think. I think that's very important, and I think that's what models the Alaska legislature as being a real positive force, is their desires to know what the people want. You are there to make decisions, but I think you're also there to listen to the folks and to represent the interests of the people in Alaska, and I think you do it very well. And, you know, I've listened to Mr. Adams many times over the years and talking about village life, and I can remember when Kodiak was pretty close to one. And it does cost more. It costs more for all the services that we have in the small communities. And I think you find the small communities often are very supportive of the services they get and also of education. And you know, I'm not an educator, but I think you see a lot of people that come to the meetings and people say, well, they're an educator, or they're this, or they're that, and they dominate the meeting. So I don't look at people by the background. I look at the people that come to testify, and I see every meeting I come to, I see Lonnie White, or Dave, or a lot of these folks, and Jim comes, and he gives his counterpoint, too. And we're all part of the community of Kodiak. And I guess what I'd like to say is to give a bit of an analogy of I worked here in 63 out at Cape Chiniac, and then I got a chance for another job working out in the Aleutians at a big radar site that they were building out there. And There were probably 1,000 people on this little bitty island, and there were 5 of us from Alaska. And, you know, I look at this whole issue as a very similar parallel, because I see and listen, I read the papers, and you guys get a lot of pressure from the big towns and the big communities and from a lot of folks that really don't like state spending, and they want to see it cut back. And I remember when I was out there and made a lot of good friends, and those people were against, absolutely adamantly against the state income tax and totally against the state school head tax that we all paid then, and it's kind of gone away because we've had some good times. And I get that same feeling now. A lot of people do feel that against it. But I ask, how long and what are their interests in Alaska? Are they looking to the future of Alaska? Because it's been well stated, I think, the necessity for a strong education and stable funding for the educational program. And I guess I'd like to close by saying that I feel that this endowment fund is really the future of Alaska, and I would please request that you pass this bill out for a vote of the people. Thank you.
Any questions? Thank you. Is there anybody that still wishes to testify? I went through the sheets, and there were some that were blank, and I just didn't call on you. If there's anybody else that hasn't testified, please feel free to come up now. Okay, seeing no one, we're still going to... Yes, Senator Adams?
One of the things that I think that you see here is the four of us that, with the exception of Fred that doesn't live here, we have an average of 7 1/4 children. Senator Duncan has 8 children, Senator Fisher has 11, Zyroff has 4, and I have 6. So you can see this educational issue is to us something. But one of the things that we will be debating on this issue is it will take 14 senators to allow this to pass, to get out to the voters. If in fact that we can come up with a menu that is acceptable to 14 senators, does it include only K through 12? Does it include the university or higher education, voc tech? Does it include the debt service? These are issues that will be debated. The other issues that will be debated also, how are we going to fund this? Are we going into the permanent fund earnings, which I think will have a very hard sledding there? It might be an area that we need to look at other funds to fund this if we brought it up. One of the things that hopefully under the chairman, Paul Fisher here, is that we can bring some of these ideas to the majority caucus. And then we can at least discuss it. I think that you will have still further time to also make further comments, as we will be going into Anchorage next week and the following week into Fairbanks and probably a teleconference. But I just want you to know it doesn't end here tonight, and we will be accepting written comments. One of the things that with me is seem like the newspapers always stick to me like flypaper. The last time I was in Kodiak, I was called by the local paper and Apple. And I was in the early 70s, along with the late John Waller, was making decisions on which villages were eligible under the land claims. And so I went here in Kodiak, and I made some determinations that some villages were not villages because they didn't have 25 permanent residents. And so my old late friend Carl Armstrong, he called me an apple because I wouldn't consider them villages. And he says, Adams, you're red on the outside and white inside. So, Mr. Chairman, what I'd like to do is with the next 20 minutes, if we can have, is since we come a long distance, is there's other issues that perhaps that in Juneau that we're looking at, some pieces of legislation that you'd like to ask us questions on. What you have is 3 members here of the 17 members in the majority of 3 out of 7, which is in Senate Finance. So they have a lot of information as far as budget process, as far as myself. I'm in the minority. 3 out of the 20 members are in the minority. So I'm a minority of a minority. But we are here. We've come a long ways. We'd like to take the next 20 minutes, if okay with you, Mr. Chairman.
That's why I was going to suggest we stay.
And perhaps some people have questions on different pieces of legislation, capital projects, or other issues that you thought about, you heard about, you read about, that perhaps we can at least try to address to you. And I know some of you asked us a personal opinions on how we feel on different legislation, because we come from a different geographical differences. I represent 47 villages, and some represent the urban areas. So we'd be more than happy, Mr. Chairman, if we could get some questions or comments from on different sections.
Yeah, it's okay with the rest of the committee. I want to make sure that there's no more comments on HJR 13. So at least that sort of part of the hearing can be closed. Also, I do want to say if you have
a card.
There was a hand. Okay, come on up. Give your name.